Chapter 20, A Madness of Angels. Naboo, 12 years ago, 1 week after the liberation of Naboo. When Padme woke up, Obi-Wan wasn't there. She lay still in her two big bed, one hand outflung on the empty space beside her. The wool sheets and down comforters felt heavy on top of her, staving off the early spring chill. They hadn't powered up the palace internal heating system in the residency yet, just the guest quarters, and the bedroom was cold, even with the brazier of coals at the foot of the bed. The days in Theed were warm, but the nights were still below freezing. A muffled sob made her glance in the direction of the window that overlooked the cliff face. "Obi-Wan?" she whispered, gathering the sheets around herself as she sat up. He was a shadowed shape against the pale curtains. "Go back to sleep," he said. "It's nothing." Padme slid off the bed and shrugged her dressing gown on over her nightgown, padding barefoot over to him as she tied the sash. "What is it?" she asked, sitting down on the window seat beside him. If Obi-Wan felt the cold, he didn't show it. He was bare-chested and only wearing a pair of drawstring pants. He swiped the heel of his hand beneath his eyes, tears a lingering wetness on his cheeks. "It's nothing," he said again. Padme could count the number of times she had seen him cry on the fingers of one hand. "No, it isn't," she said, leaning over to touch his knee. "Tell me." He shook his head. "I can't," he said. "You wouldn't understand." "Try, please. You're scaring me." He raised one hand to cover hers, but his gaze was somewhere else, fixed on a point over her shoulder. "I joined the Order when I was 2 days old, he said eventually. "I never had anything but the Order. It's not even... I've met a lot of people who tell me that they always wanted to be Jedi. Kids who tell me that they dreamt of becoming knights. It was never anything like that for me. I didn't want to be a Jedi. Because I am. I was a Jedi. It's all I've ever been. It's not a question of wanting or doing. It's what I am. It's the only thing I know. If I'm not a Jedi, then I'm not anything. I don't know how to be anything else." His fingers gripped hers tightly. "Even after Qui-Gon died. Even when I had nothing else, I had that. No one could ever take it from me. And now I've done it to myself." Padme caught his head between her hands, making sure that he didn't look away from her. "You aren't nothing," she told him. "And you have me." Obi-Wan shut his eyes. "You aren't nothing," Padme insisted. "You are a man too, not only a Jedi."
"There isn't any such thing as only a Jedi," Obi-Wan said wearily. "You're either Jedi or you're not. There's nothing in between. And I'm not even that anymore."
"You're a man," Padme said. "You can be more than a Jedi. You have been for months now. You always have been."
"No, I haven't,"
Obi-Wan said, his voice cracking in his distress.
"Padme, I don't know how to be anything else."
"You can learn," Padme said. You have been. Obi-Wan, please. You know you're better than that.
He shook his head. There's no one better than the Jedi.
That isn't true. You know that. I know that. After today, the entire galaxy knows that.
She hesitated, feeling the two sharp bones of his face beneath her hands.
You haven't changed your mind.
His eyes were huge and sad.
No, he said.
I haven't changed my mind.
The Order and the Jedi, they aren't the same thing anymore. Maybe they haven't been for a long time. And I'm not fit to be a Jedi after the things I've done.
Padme stilled, letting her hands fall back to her lap. Her voice was small as she asked,
"Because of me?"
Obi-Wan's head jerked up.
"No! Padme, no, never!"
"Then what? Obi-Wan..."
"I've done things that no Jedi would ever do," Obi-Wan said, his eyes pleading with her to understand. "And I did it without hesitation and without regret. The blood on my hands will never wash off, and the fact that I can live with that is what makes me unfit to ever be a Jedi."
"Oh, my love," Padme breathed.
"I can live with it."
His voice was soft.
"I would have failed the trials even if I had been allowed to take them, and died in the attempt."
"What?" He'd never told her that.
"The trials kill the unworthy."
He looked away, clearly seeing something other than her.
"A true Jedi would never have done any of it. Would never have even thought about it. And the things I've done, I never even hesitated. I didn't even think about it. And I should have. I should have thought about it. I should have hesitated. A Jedi would have thought..." "A Jedi would not have done it."
He pushed his hands back through his hair. "You did what had to be done," Padme said. "We both did."
"I know," Obi-Wan said bleakly. "What I did was right, but it wasn't what a Jedi would have done. It wasn't what Qui-Gon would have done, but it was right. I never thought before that something could be right and yet not be what a Jedi would do. And that, I can't get my head around that. I can't stay in the Order, but I don't know how not to be a Jedi. But the kind of Jedi I thought I was doesn't even exist. The Jedi Order I believed in isn't even real."
He shook his head.
"I can live with what I've done, but I don't know how to live with that. With being lied to my entire life, and made to think that the Order was something other than the Senate's attack dogs."
His voice caught on a sob, and Padme put her arms around him and pulled him down against her.
"You are better than they are," she whispered into his hair. "You are better than any of them."
His face was wet with tears.
"I don't want to be. I shouldn't be. And I'm not. I don't understand."
Her heart broke at the sheer, miserable confusion in his voice. Padme had had a year to get used to the idea that the Senate wasn't coming to save Naboo. Obi-Wan had had his entire world turned upside down in a matter of days. She held him while he wept, his shoulders shaking with the force of his sobs. She didn't ask him if he could do it, really do it, walk away from the Order that had been all he had ever known, because he had already burned that bridge behind him with extreme prejudice. She didn't ask him if he loved her, because he wouldn't be here if he didn't. She didn't ask him if he would stay, because she already knew the answer. She just held him until he had cried himself to exhaustion, slumped half in and half out of her lap,
his Padawan braid tickling her neck.
"I'm sorry,"
he told her, trying to clean his face off. Padme used the sleeve of her dressing gown to wipe away the last tears, then kissed him gently. "You have nothing to be sorry for," she said. "You are a good man, Obi-Wan Kenobi, and I love you."
"I don't know how to be a good man and not be a Jedi,"
Obi-Wan said, his voice raw.
"Yes, you do."
She kissed him again. "You get to decide who you are now. You don't have to let anyone else tell you who to be, not even me."
"I trust you with my soul," Obi-Wan said.
That might have meant something different to a Jedi than it did to one of the Naboo, but Padme didn't think so.
"I know," she told him. "I won't betray it. Now, can we please, please go back to bed? I'm freezing."
That startled the laugh out of Obi-Wan.
"I hadn't noticed. I'm sorry."
He straightened up from the window seat, obviously stiff from however long he had been sitting there before Padme had woken, then scooped her up in a bridal carry. She bit back her shriek of surprise, since that would probably bring her handmaidens rushing in with their blasters out. Obi-Wan carried her back to the bed, checked on the brazier while she shed her dressing gown, and then crawled in beside her.
"Thank you," he whispered,
as she pushed her frozen feet against his warm ones. She didn't know how he always managed to be either a few degrees warmer or a few degrees colder than she was, depending on the season, but it was probably some trick of the Force.
"I don't deserve you."
"I'm not a prize to be won," Padme said. "You don't have to deserve me." He thought about that, then nodded. He kissed her, his mouth soft and gentle against hers, and his arms went around her as she curled against him.
"I know.
I know." Coruscant, present day.
When he had still been a Padawan, Obi-Wan had dreamed of one day coming to this place. He hadn't been a Padawan for a very long time, and he hadn't thought about this place for years. It was a place for Jedi, and whatever else Obi-Wan Kenobi was, he was no longer a Jedi. He had never expected to come here.
He had been stripped of the collar and binders, but he was too deep in the Force to be grateful for their absence. Barefoot, clad only in a pair of thin drawstring trousers, Obi-Wan sat on the elaborately patterned marble floor of the Room of Little Ease in a meditative position, his hands resting loosely on his knees. He had been here for hours already, would be here for hours more, and the trials had not yet begun. The Jedi Temple had been constructed to channel the Force, and here at the heart of the temple it flowed more freely than it did anywhere else. Obi-Wan had never felt anything like it before, and he could sense it threatening to consume him, could feel the edges of his consciousness fraying off into the Force. A Jedi would have allowed it to happen, but Obi-Wan wasn't a Jedi, and he fought it, hanging grimly onto the core of himself as long as he could, even as it, too, began to slide away.
This time, if we burn, if he comes near me, I think I might kill him. I have a bad feeling about this.
You were right about one thing, Master.
You will be a Jedi.
Now that's a name I've not heard in a long time.
Negotiations were short. You can kill me, but you will never destroy me.
This weapon is your life.
Strike me down.
There's still enough time for all of us to get killed.
I can't remember who I used to be. Is it not the purpose of the Jedi to hunt the Sith? We will have our revenge. I will not kill Anakin. Padme. I love you. You're going to kill him, aren't you? I will live and die a Jedi. I am not asking for permission. And I will rise up more powerful than you can imagine. I'm a Jedi. I'm not a Jedi anymore. We're not supposed to want anything. Do you know what it feels like to feel your mind snap? I was once a Jedi Knight. You never really stopped being a Jedi. You were my brother. I told you they were back. I can't be a Jedi if that's what they are now. I loved you. We burned together. Obi-Wan's life unspooled before him. Birth to apprenticeship to abandonment. Resignation to marriage to trial. Deep in the Force as he was, he let it pass him by without emotion, barely with the acknowledgement that it was his life, rather than a stranger's. Some of it wasn't even his life, because this deep in the Force, the boundaries between universes, between individuals, began to fray, and the lives of 100 other Obi-Wan Kenobis bled into his own. His ties to his own world, to the life he had lived, slid away. And for a time, he was no longer Obi-Wan Kenobi, the Queen's Knight, but no one at all. He came back to himself slowly, aware of another presence in the chamber beside him. Obi-Wan didn't open his eyes to see who it was, still settling back into his own skin. The edges of all those other Obi-Wans running away like water from his memory. If he had looked, there would have been no one there. No one to see. A hand settled on his shoulder, warm and strong and familiar. Obi-Wan let out a shuddering breath. You are more than you think you are, Obi-Wan. Follow your instincts. Trust in the living Force. Only a Jedi could take the trials. Only a good Jedi could survive them. The trials killed those Padawans unworthy of becoming knights, and Obi-Wan had left that path behind years ago. You give yourself too little credit, my young apprentice. Obi-Wan had broken his vows. Broken the Jedi Code, and never regretted it. There is more to the Force than the Jedi Code, Obi-Wan. But these were the Jedi Trials, and Obi-Wan was no Jedi. Feel, don't think. Trust your instincts. Sending him to the Trials was a death sentence disguised as mercy. Yoda would not send you to your death. You are a Jedi, Obi-Wan, no matter what you believe. Trust in the Force, and trust in yourself. When Obi-Wan had been a youngling, he had seen the doors to the Chamber of the Ordeal open on the dead bodies of Padawans who had failed their trials. Or, once, a Padawan who had been driven mad by the Force. The Force was merciless. You don't need mercy. That was easy for a dead man to say. You are wise and strong, Obi-Wan, and I am very proud of you, even if I cannot agree with every decision you have made. You will not fail this test. Light settled on Obi-Wan's still closed eyelids. Behind him, he heard the doors open, a quiet murmur of sound from the crowd gathered outside, and two sets of heavy footsteps approaching. It is time, Plo Koon said. Obi-Wan opened his eyes, straightening slowly up to his feet. It had been a long time since he had spent a full night in meditation. Not quite as long as it had been since he had left the Order, but a very long time nonetheless. The chamber he was in was small, decorated in the elaborate knotwork patterns the Jedi of 4,000 years ago had favored when rebuilding the temple after the sacking of Coruscant. A stained glass window above him let in the first light of dawn, placed so that it shone down directly upon the center of the room, where the patterns in the floor met in an unending plated circle. Obi-Wan stood precisely in the middle of it. Directly in front of him was a pair of closed double doors, plain and undecorated. Even looking at them made Obi-Wan shudder, though he did his best to conceal it. He spread his arms as Tholm tapped a finger against the back of his wrist. The two masters garbed him in the traditional robes of the Jedi Order, plain linen and raw silk, undyed and nearly colorless. Obi-Wan had been in robes, or mostly in robes, since he had been taken prisoner on the Sakak, but somehow this felt different. It felt like giving up. Qui-Gon should have been here. There were always two masters, or rarely a master and a knight, to shepherd a Padawan into the Chamber of the Ordeal. And even though it had been 13 years since Qui-Gon's death, Obi-Wan felt his absence as keenly as though it had been yesterday. Tradition. So much of this was tradition. There was precedent for Jedi accused of turning to the dark side taking their trials, but not for centuries, for millennia. The records of the exact procedure lost somewhere in the archives. Since Obi-Wan had technically still been a Padawan when he left the Order, they had defaulted back to the usual rites for a Padawan taking his trials of knighthood, traditions millennia old. It was, he supposed, preferable to merely being shoved into the Chamber of the Ordeal with the expectation that he wouldn't be walking out. Tholm fastened a synth leather utility belt around his waist, unburdened by the usual assortment of pouches, and Obi-Wan stepped into the boots that Plo Koon set in front of him, letting the master fasten the straps around his calves. Tholm set a cloak over his shoulders, and Obi-Wan slipped his arms through the sleeves, shutting his eyes for an instant as the hood was drawn up over his head. Plo Koon held something out in front of Obi-Wan. He blinked, startled out of his reverie, and stared down at it. His lightsaber. Obi-Wan looked between Plo and Tholm, not reaching out for it in case it was snatched away. A Padawan always took their lightsaber into the trials, but he hadn't thought the Council would allow him his weapon, even if they had been forced to take the binders and the collar off. "Take it," Tholm said. Obi-Wan reached out and curled his fingers around his lightsaber hilt, relief settling through him at the feel of the cool metal beneath his hand. He might carry a blaster as a matter of course, but a lightsaber was what he had trained on, the weapon he considered an extension of his own body, constructed with his own two hands and the Force, and with a tiny seed of his soul inside it. He lifted the weapon from Plo Koon's outstretched hands, reaching out with his mind for the spark of energy inside it that let him know that neither the crystal nor the power cell had been removed. He looked at the two masters again, and at Plo Koon's slight nod, depressed the trigger. It ignited in a flare of pure white plasma, the no color of absolute neutrality blazing across the faces of the Jedi and reflecting off the marble floor. Obi-Wan was aware of some scuffling behind him, outside the chamber, and a few murmurs of surprise, but he didn't look back, just deactivated the blade and hung the hilt off his belt.
When he raised his eyes, the doors to the chamber at the heart of the Jedi Temple stood open. Obi-Wan's breath caught. Trust in the living force, Qui-Gon's memory whispered to him. Padme, I love you, Obi-Wan thought, and walked forward into the chamber of the ordeal. The doors swung shut behind him, leaving him alone in the dark. The J-type diplomatic barge settled gently down on the government landing pad at Theed Central Spaceport, along with the three N-1 starfighters that had escorted it during its tour of Naboo's lunar and orbital facilities. Above the barge's gleaming chromium body, the protective shields over the landing pad reformed, giving everything a faint blue tint. As crew members came forward to secure the ship, and the usual RNSF honor guard formed up in ranks, the doors opened and the ramp came down, revealing the dark-robed figure of the Naboo delegate to the Confederate Congress standing at the top. Palpatine of Naboo walked slowly and ceremoniously down the ramp, apparently conscious of his rank, followed shortly afterwards by his entourage and the RNSF bodyguard that had accompanied him. Unlike the Queen's Guard, which mixed regulars and clone troopers, Palpatine's guard, by his own preference, was made up entirely of clone troopers. Their gleaming white armor and concealing helmets, with red markings indicating their assignment to the delegate service, was at odds with the red and blue synth leather uniforms of the Honor Guard. The commander of the Honor Guard saluted as Palpatine approached her. "Welcome back to Naboo, Congressman Palpatine," she said. "Thank you, Lieutenant," Palpatine said, looking around the landing bay with a proprietary eye. Unusually for Naboo, there was not a single clone trooper amongst the members of the Honor Guard. "I do hope there hasn't been any trouble in my absence." "Aside from the Holonet outage, my lord, it's been very quiet," the RNSF lieutenant said. "Her Royal Highness expected your return yesterday." "I was unavoidably delayed, I'm afraid," Palpatine said. "Some of the devastation on the moons from the Trade Federation bombardment is truly awful. Those horrible droids have no concept of the difference between civilian and military targets." The lieutenant, a survivor of the occupation of Naboo 13 years earlier, raised her eyebrows but resisted the urge to comment on what was, to her, self-evident. The delegate, everyone knew, hadn't been on Naboo then. He couldn't be expected to understand what everybody else over a certain age did. "That's very true, my lord," the lieutenant said, her voice carefully neutral. "I have speeders waiting to take you and your entourage to the palace." "No rest for the wicked, I see," Palpatine said with a gentle smile. "Lead on, lieutenant." "Will you leave your guard behind, sir? We can cover you to the palace." "Oh, no, I'd rather not," Palpatine said. "I'm sure your men are very good. It's just that this terrible business with the Trade Federation has me rather on edge. I'll keep my own men with me until we reach the palace. I'm afraid I have urgent business with the Queen and the Royal Advisory Council." Something in the lieutenant shifted subtly, but all she said was, "Of course, my lord, I understand completely. This way." As he walked, there was a faint buzz from the secure comlink stored inside his robes. Not his official one, but the second one. The secret one. Palpatine juggled it out as though it was something other than what it was, murmuring an apology to the lieutenant, and looked down at the text message that seemed to be nothing more than a string of random characters. "Something urgent, my lord," the lieutenant asked. "Just an update from my family's vineyards," Palpatine said, tucking the comlink away. Decoded, the message read, "Frostbite, ETA 6 hours. Confirm Blackfish on world." There was nothing to see, and no light to see it by. Swallowing back his nerves, Obi-Wan reached up with both hands to push back the hood of his cloak, although that didn't help matters appreciably. Hello? He said, his voice echoing back at him. Is anyone there? No response. Obi-Wan could feel the Force around him, lying so thick that he felt as though he could reach out and manipulate it with his bare hands. It stirred a little as he took a few steps further into the chamber. Obi-Wan held his breath, waiting for something to jump out at him, but nothing happened. Hoping that whatever was inside the chamber took it as a threat, he slipped his lightsaber off his belt and ignited it, raising it up to see. The shadows swallowed up the white beam of his lightsaber, leaving him with only a small circle of pale light. Obi-Wan kept walking forward, letting the blade illuminate his path. Reaching out into the Force, he could feel the size of the room. Vast, almost unimaginably huge, stretching forward into the years to come and back into the centuries already past. Obi-Wan shuddered, and wasn't quite sure why. And when he reached out again, it seemed to be a much smaller room, no larger than the combat simulator room in the Royal Palace of Theed. Knights never spoke about the trials. Younglings and Padawans did all the time, wondering what it would be like. But the knights and masters who had passed the trials never discussed it. Qui-Gon had told Obi-Wan, years ago, that the trials weren't the greatest test that a Jedi would ever be faced with, but that they came close. Quinlan, after he had passed his trials, had only grimaced and described them as a hammer. Obi-Wan had been preparing for them for 2 years before he'd gone to Naboo, before he had nearly forgotten their existence in the chaos of the occupation. He had no idea what to expect. Jedi. The whisper came from behind him. Obi-Wan whirled, his lightsaber rising in a ready position, but there was no one there. He couldn't see the doors through which he had entered the chamber. I'm not a Jedi, he said.
Jedi?
He turned again. Nothing.
I have been waiting for you, Jedi.
I am not a Jedi, Obi-Wan spat. Who's there? Show yourself.
Always remember, I'm fear. Always remember, I am hunter. Always remember, I am filth.
Obi-Wan knew that voice. He hadn't heard it in years, save for in his nightmares, waking gasping with Qui-Gon's name on his lips and Padme's hands on him. No, he said. No, it can't be.
Always remember, I am nothing.
There was a flash of red at the corner of Obi-Wan's vision, the brief impression of too many mechanical legs skittering across the smooth floor. He turned again, trying to see it, then whirled as he heard a second whisper at his back.
Through victory, my chains are broken. The chains are the easy part. It's what goes on in here that's hard.
More skittering. Obi-Wan kept turning, trying to see what it was, who it was. It couldn't be who he thought it was. It couldn't be. Show yourself.
I was apprenticed to the most powerful being in the galaxy once. I was destined to become so much more. But it was stolen from me. I was robbed of that destiny by you, Jedi.
I am not a Jedi. Another flash of red. Not the brilliant glow of a lightsaber, but something else. Something darker. Just outside the circle of light cast by Obi-Wan's blade.
My master forgot me. Replaced me. He wanted to replace me with you, Jedi. With my destroyer. Thief.
Show yourself, Obi-Wan repeated. Don't skulk in the shadows like an animal.
Do not speak to me of shadows, Jedi. My path has been so dark. Darker than I ever dreamed it could be.
Obi-Wan could feel his breath on the back of his neck. He spun, his lightsaber briefly illuminating the scarlet face of his Azabrak male, tattooed with the black markings of the Dathomiri Night Brothers. You're dead, Obi-Wan spat before he could stop himself. I killed you myself. None of this is real. A blow sent him flying backwards, his lightsaber spinning out of his hand and deactivating. Obi-Wan hit a column and was held there by the Force, his feet scrabbling at thin air as he was hoisted up. Darkness closed in around him like the invisible fingers around his throat. Real! Came the roar, close enough that Obi-Wan flinched. What is real, Jedi? Is this not real? A sharp-nailed finger dragged down the side of Obi-Wan's cheek. He could feel the creature's hot breath on his face. For an instant, he thought he saw the gleam of mad yellow eyes in the darkness, and then they, too, were gone. I am not, Obi-Wan said, choking the words out past the iron grip on his throat. A Jedi! I resigned the order! Words, 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 Jedi! All words! Jedi, not Jedi. Vows and oaths and lies. So many lies. Do you even remember the truth anymore, Obi-Wan Kenobi? Do you even remember who you were before all the lies? Who I am is no longer important. I am an officer of the Royal Naboo Security Forces, husband to Queen Amidala of Naboo, a general of the Confederacy of Independent Systems. Words, words, words. You are a Jedi. You will always be a Jedi. You will never be anything but a Jedi because you cannot cut it out. You cannot burn it out. That woman whose bed you share will never take it from you because Jedi is what you are, Kenobi. Jedi you were born, and Jedi you will live, and Jedi you will die. And you will die, Jedi. You will die as you should have died all those years ago. You were a mistake. You were not accounted for. You will die as your master died. Obi-Wan spat in his face. The backhanded blow that followed knocked his head back against the pillar, hard enough that Obi-Wan saw stars, a tooth slicing open the inside of his lip. This time, the fingers that pressed against his throat were flesh and bone, a thumb digging into the soft spot just beneath his jaw. You will die, Jedi, Darth Maul whispered against his ear. But slowly... So slowly, you will suffer as I have suffered. A red lightsaber flashed into existence between them, close enough that the heat from the blade singed Obi-Wan's beard. Across it, he met the Sith Lord's mad yellow eyes, saw the gaunt red and black face that had haunted his nightmares for more than a decade. His horns had grown. Thin and curling a little, but with the tips polished to razor sharpness. I will make sure you stay awake to feel every single cut, Kenobi, Maul said, as Obi-Wan struggled in his grip. Your death will be beyond excruciating, but it will be long in coming, as long as mine has been. You will suffer as I have suffered, lose as I have lost, will see everything you love, everything you have built, stolen from you by another, a thief. You will be replaced as I was replaced,
and everyone will forget that you were anything, that you lived, that you were. You will drown in your despair, and maybe, just maybe, when you beg me for death, I will let you die. But you will share my pain, Jedi. I will never beg you for anything, Sith, Obi-Wan said, trying to lean as far away from him as he could get. It wasn't very far. You will, Jedi. You will. Never, Obi-Wan said, and managed to get one hand up between them. A burst of force energy sent Maul rearing back, as Obi-Wan dropped to the ground and rolled out of the way, flinging a hand out for his lightsaber. He saw the monstrous construction that had replaced Maul's severed legs. It was as though he was looking at a massive spider, save that it had been constructed out of scrap metal that whined and flexed like a living thing. 8 wiry legs skittered across the floor towards him, as Obi-Wan caught his lightsaber and threw himself into a backflip, landing well out of the way for a precious few seconds as he ignited his blade. He flicked it out to one side as he straightened up, the certainty that came with battle falling over him. The Jedi Council was right about one thing. Whatever else he was also Queen Amidala's living weapon. Spoken! Maul roared as he scrambled towards Obi-Wan, his legs clicking frantically against the floor. Like a Jedi! When I cut you in half, Obi-Wan said, drawing his lightsaber back over his head in the opening move of Sarosu, his favorite style. I should have aimed for your neck. Red and white lightsabers met in a blinding clash of energy. Most of Palpatine's entourage had remained behind at Theed Central with the diplomatic barge, warned that he would be leaving again very quickly for the emergency Congress session on Raxus. His bodyguards trailed ceremoniously after him as he debarked his speeder in one of the many palace courtyards and headed in toward the great dome of the Queen's Hall, where he had been informed that Queen Amidala and the Royal Advisory Council were already meeting. As he passed through the familiar halls of the palace, he took note of the palace guards standing at regular intervals. Clones and regular Naboo, as Her Royal Highness preferred, uniformed and helmeted identically, and with their weapons in hand. Something about the clones struck him as odd, but Palpatine couldn't put his finger on what it was, and besides, it hardly mattered. They had been created to follow orders and do their duty. He had no doubt that they would act as instructed when it came to the fire. The Kaminoans never erred. There were more guards outside the entrance to the throne room, both regulars this time. They came to attention as Palpatine approached. Your guards, my lord. That will not be necessary, Palpatine said, the force strengthening his words. Leaving your guards behind won't be necessary, my lord, said the same palace guard who had spoken before. Her Royal Highness is expecting you. Remain at your posts no matter what you hear, Palpatine said. Yes, my lord. The doors to the room slid open as Palpatine strode through, revealing Queen Amidala seated in her throne, accompanied by 4 seated handmaidens and the members of the Royal Advisory Council. Palace guards, clones, and regulars stood at regular intervals along the perimeter of the chamber. Obi-Wan Kenobi, he noted, was not there. Good. That would make this easier. The Queen's elaborate headdress covered her hair, leaving only her white painted face visible. She turned towards him as he approached. Congressman Palpatine, she said, I understand you have some urgent news for us. I hadn't heard about any trouble on Rory or Omadun. Have you heard something from your contacts in the Republic? Palpatine raised one hand. Behind him and his armored clone troopers, the door to the throne room slid shut. There was a murmur from the watching members of the council. Your reign is at an end, Your Highness,
Palpatine said.
Amidala stood, tilting her chin up.
So, she said, it's treason then.
Palpatine looked at the clones stationed throughout the room. Execute command word vindication, he said.
Maul vanished between one blow and the next. Obi-Wan hit the floor in a controlled roll, deactivating his lightsaber instinctively to keep from skewering himself, and came up in a crouch, flicking his blade sideways as it ignited. There was light in the chamber now, a soft, misty glow that seemed to come from everywhere and nowhere at once. It illuminated the space, revealing a room about the same size as the starfighter hangar attached to the palace at Theed. As he straightened cautiously up, Obi-Wan touched his fingers to his split lip, expecting them to come away red with blood. But when he looked down, they were clean. He started to reach for his throat, remembering the pressure of Maul's hands on him, then heard a sound behind him and whirled, his lightsaber at the ready.
It was a boy.
Obi-Wan stared at him blankly, not recognizing him. The boy, young man really, was in his early 20s, with long, dirty blonde hair and bright blue eyes. His most notable feature was the distinctive scarring on his cheeks, the puckered white lines of a Corellian grin.
Obi-Wan had never seen him before in his life, and yet, somehow, he knew him. Knew him in his bones and in his soul. The Force drawing them both together, as though every second of every day of both their lives had been working up to their meeting.
He drew in his breath, gasping, and couldn't stop his half-step forward, one hand outstretched. The boy looked at him, surprise widening his eyes.
"I know you,"
he said, sounding bewildered.
"How do I know you?"
"I don't know," Obi-Wan admitted. "Who are you? What's your name?"
"I'm..." Between one eye blink and the next, the boy was gone. Obi-Wan stood still, breathing hard. He could feel his lightsaber hilt digging into his palm, and only belatedly deactivated it. There was a voice from behind him. "But what about the Naboo? Isn't the Supreme Chancellor going to support them?" Obi-Wan turned slowly, already knowing what he was going to see and wincing in anticipation. He was standing in Greenhand's spire in the royal palace in Theed, on the outside of a circle of 12 chairs that had been drawn up in the otherwise empty space. A much younger Obi-Wan Kenobi, looking gaunt and uncomfortable in his new Jedi robes, was standing at the center of the circle, surrounded by the members of the Jedi High Council of 12 years past.
"The Naboo are no longer your concern, young Obi-Wan," said Ki-Adi-Mundi, his tone mildly reproving.
The younger Obi-Wan crossed his arms across his chest, mulishly stubborn.
"The Naboo have been my concern for the past year," he said. "The Senate can't just leave them, not after what the Trade Federation did. Not after the Senate already abandoned them once. It's against all the principles the Republic was built on."
The members of the High Council exchanged glances. Then Mace Windu leaned forward and said,
"The Naboo will be taken care of, as long as Queen Amidala is willing to be reasonable."
"Reasonable?" the young Obi-Wan demanded. "What does she have to be reasonable about? The Trade Federation invaded and occupied this planet, killed thousands of her people, tried to strip them of their sovereignty, tried to murder her. What does Padme, what does the Queen have to be reasonable about?"
Obi-Wan covered his face with his hands, not wanting to see this or hear it again. It had been bad enough the first time, and even though he knew he had made the right decision, it still made him cringe to think about.
"The situation is far more delicate than you are aware of, Padawan Kenobi,"
said Uriel Poof, who was dead now. The Galactic Senate has certain obligations to the Trade Federation. The Senate is siding with the Federation against the Naboo? They invaded us! There was a beat of silence that Obi-Wan didn't remember noticing at the time. He lowered his hands, looking around at the council. Now he could see, as he had been too upset to note then, that the various members of the council were clearly uncomfortable at the turn the discussion had taken. They knew, as well as he had, that what the Senate was doing was wrong. "The Senate is not siding with anyone," Windu said. "However, there are certain concessions that must be made before they can offer the Naboo the humanitarian aid that Chancellor Palpatine and Queen Amidala are requesting." "Concessions that the Trade Federation has to make," the younger Obi-Wan said. "You know that they're saying the occupation was legal." "That is none of your concern, young Padawan," said Apu Ransesis, and Obi-Wan rolled his eyes. Eeth Koth said, "The whole affair is very embarrassing for the Senate." "As it should be," even Pyle put in. The Zabrak Master gave him a reproving look for the interruption. "And frankly, the Senate would like to sweep the whole business under the rug. Chancellor Palpatine convinced them to do otherwise. On his advice, given his greater knowledge of the planet, and bearing in mind that the system has had no Senate representation over the past year, he has suggested that government aid be conditional on certain concessions made by the Naboo." The younger Obi-Wan stared at him. "Palpatine wasn't even on world during the occupation. What does he know about Naboo? About what the Trade Federation did to us? To them?" "The Supreme Chancellor is Naboo, young Padawan," Adigalia said pointedly. "He is more than aware of the situation."
"He hasn't been here!"
"Unsuitable this display is for a Jedi,"
Yoda remarked.
Even after a year away, Obi-Wan was still conditioned to respond to a command from Yoda when it was put in that tone of voice, and he winced, some of his combative attitude fading away.
"Can I ask what those conditions are?"
In the tone of one hoping that Obi-Wan would be placated by an answer, Mace Windu said, "Since the indigenous government of Naboo has been severely affected by the occupation, the Supreme Chancellor recommended that government of this system be turned over to an external committee appointed by the Galactic Senate. Planetary and lunar officials, including Queen Amidala, would retain their positions for the time being to ensure continuity, but the actual work of government would be carried out by Republic officials. Local defense forces, I understand they've been quite troublesome to the Trade Federation, would be disbanded and replaced by Republic security forces if necessary, though law enforcement will remain as it is for now. Under these circumstances, Naboo would lose its right to Senate representation, though the Chancellor has arranged that the system retain a representative without voting privileges. To coordinate this, two Jedi Knights, Master Galia and Master Shakti, will remain on planet for a minimum of 1 year." The younger Obi-Wan was staring at him in undisguised horror, his jaw dropping further with every word. When Windu had finished, he demanded, "The Senate wants to strip Naboo of its sovereignty? That's what the Trade Federation wanted. That's what the Trade Federation did. And the Senate is just going to..."
"Padawan Kenobi, that is enough," Sacy Teen's voice was sharp. "It is not the place for members of this order to make policy for the Republic."
Obi-Wan glared at him.
"No, just to enforce it. Nobody here even argued with it, did you? This is against everything the Jedi stand for."
"You are allowing your attachments to dictate your beliefs, young Obi-Wan," Plo Koon said, in his most soothing voice.
"This has nothing to do with my attachments," Obi-Wan said. "This is about what's right, and this decision is anything but.
The Order cannot support this.
Support the decision of the Senate, the Jedi will,
Yoda said, frowning at him.
To defend the Republic, our purpose is.
This isn't about the defense of the Republic. This is about the dissolution of planetary sovereignty, which is against the Charter of the Republic, and...
He stared at them, turning to look at all the council members.
You're going to do it, aren't you? You're just going to smile and nod and let yourselves be used by the Senate to replace the Federation occupation with a Republic one? How blind are you? What kind of Padawan Kenobi?
Obi-Wan turned back to look at Windu, his hands clenched into fists at his sides. His glare could have cut Durasteel.
We are the Jedi, he said. We are supposed to be better than this. We are supposed to be more than the lackeys of the Galactic Senate and the Supreme Chancellor.
Padawan Kenobi, this is no longer any of your concern.
Obi-Wan ignored him.
You left us here, he said.
Qui-Gon died and you left us here. Left the Naboo here to suffer even when you knew what was happening. And you're going to do it again. The Senate is going to do it again. I thought that this order was better than that. I thought that the Jedi were better than that. But I guess I was wrong. I guess that everything I learned, everything you taught me, everything Qui-Gon died for was a lie. It was all lies. Because the Jedi don't care about the code at all. You don't care about the Republic, or the people, or about anything except appeasing the Senate.
No one spoke. It was as though they had suddenly realized the severity, or the veracity, of the situation.
Well, you can all go to blazes, Obi-Wan said. If that's what the Jedi are now, then I can't be a Jedi. I resign.
Before anyone could respond, he turned on his heel and strode away, his boots clicking on the marble floor as he waved the door open. Obi-Wan looked away as the scene dissolved around him. It hurt, even though it had been years past. He could still remember the betrayal of that awful realization, as though it had happened yesterday. A hand clasped his shoulder. Obi-Wan stiffened, his thumb brushing the trigger on his lightsaber as the blade ignited, but whoever was behind him didn't seem put off by that.
There's a storm coming, Obi-Wan, Qui-Gon Jinn told him. Not just for Naboo, not just for the Republic. This galaxy is going to burn.
How? Obi-Wan asked. Careful not to look back, because he didn't think he could bear it if there was no one there.
Who?
Qui-Gon squeezed his shoulder.
Some things are certain, he said. I don't understand. When the time comes, Qui-Gon advised him, don't look back. Trust your instincts. Be mindful of the living force.
He paused.
Everything is going to change. Be ready.
The pressure on Obi-Wan's shoulder lifted.
Remember your promise,
Qui-Gon whispered, his voice echoing all around Obi-Wan, and Obi-Wan spun.
Master!
There was nothing there.
Obi-Wan stood alone in the dark chamber, his lit lightsaber burning in his fist. And blinked as he looked down at the gleaming blue blade.
The troopers behind him shouldered their blaster rifles, but the palace guards only moved to aim their weapons at Palpatine's men, not at the Queen and her council the way they should have done. Amidala put her hands on the desk in front of her and leaned forward, sneering behind her face paint. We removed the chips, traitor, she said. Arrest him.
What is going on here?
That was C.O. Bibble, the governor of Theed, rising from his seat with outrage painted across his neat features. Congressman Palpatine, what? A blaster bolt from one of the troopers at Palpatine's back took him between the eyes, and Bibble dropped like a rock. With screams of mingled outrage and fright, most of the remaining members of the council dropped to the floor, a few of them going for concealed weapons. Quash Panaka, the commander of the Royal Naboo Security Forces, came up with a blaster and got two shots off before he was riddled with blaster bolts. Three of the handmaidens converged on Queen Amidala, knocking her down beneath the desk. Another, Palpatine thought it was Dorme, but it was hard to tell, came up shooting, managing to get a few shots off even after taking half a dozen blaster bolts to the torso. The palace guard was shooting too, moving in to protect the queen even as Palpatine's more heavily armored and armed troopers thinned their numbers. Palpatine walked untouched through the hailstorm of blaster bolts, slipping his lightsaber out of his sleeve holster into his hand. The Minister for Culture, lying bleeding on the floor, grabbed at his ankle with one hand, a holdout blaster in the other. Palpatine ignited his lightsaber and took her head off in the same blow. He flicked aside blaster bolts as the handmaiden Holly fired at him over the queen's desk, raising one hand to send her flying backwards against the throne with a blast of force lightning. Behind him, his clone troopers were systematically slaughtering every other being left alive in the throne room. Palpatine flicked the fingers of his free hand, snapping another handmaiden's neck as she popped up to fire at him. That left two. Palpatine went around the side of the desk, where the handmaiden Kine was covering the queen with her own body. She fired as she saw him, a quick burst of three blaster shots. Palpatine tossed her aside with a twist of the force, hearing the crack as her neck broke. Amidala straightened up from her crouch, a holdout blaster in her hand. Traitor, she spat, as all around her, Palpatine's clones executed the last living members of her council. She raised the blaster to fire, and Palpatine's lightsaber took her hand off at the wrist. The queen took a step back, clutching her stump to her breasts. Her eyes were wide with pain and shock behind her face paint, and she barely had time to gasp before Palpatine buried his lightsaber in her belly. She cried out, her voice high-pitched with shock, and he realized. He grabbed at her headdress with the force, dragging it off, and even then he wasn't sure until Sabe snarled, "Long live the queen!" and raked the nails of her remaining hand across his face before Palpatine bisected her with his lightsaber. It felt like the entire Jedi Temple had heard about Obi-Wan Kenobi being forced to take his trials and had turned out accordingly. Ahsoka, by virtue of being a High Counselor's Padawan, had managed to get a spot near the front with Barriss and Master Voss, who had given up all pretense at calm and was chewing nervously on a fingernail. It had been hours now. Ahsoka had seen a few other Padawans take their trials, watching the closed doors to the Room of Little Ease with her heart in her throat and wondering if they would open on a dead body or a new night. She wouldn't take her trials for years yet, but that didn't keep her from wondering what it would be like, whether she would survive them. If Captain Kenobi was going to die, then surely the doors would have already opened by now. Aside from Master Plo and Master Thome, who were inside the Room of Little Ease waiting for the doors to the Chamber of the Ordeal to open, the remainder of the High Council was clustered in a corner of the room. Vokana Che had managed to convince Yoda to return to the Halls of Healing for a scan, but he had finished a few hours ago and was now sitting on his hover pod, speaking with Mace Windu and the Dark Woman. Shakti, Thrasa, and Adigalia were standing a little ways away, speaking in urgent, hissed whispers. The sound of a bell tolling made everyone gathered in the semicircular chamber outside the trials rooms look up, the tension in the force increasing by leaps and bounds. The doors to the Chamber of the Ordeal were opening. Master Voss bit through the fingernail he was chewing on. "Come on, Obi-Wan," he whispered.
probably not even aware he was doing it. From here, Ahsoka had a perfect view through the Room of Little Ease to the Chamber of the Ordeal as the doors slid open. Kenobi was standing with his back to the doors, his lightsaber ignited and flicked out to one side. His blue lightsaber. Ahsoka was certain it had been white before he'd entered the chamber. Kenobi turned at the sound of the opening doors, blinked for a moment, then strode towards them. He stopped in the entrance to the chamber where the rest of the Jedi were waiting, looking around at all of them. A flurry of whispers rising as news of his appearance spread. Then deactivated his lightsaber and tossed the hilt across the floor at the High Council, where it came spinning to a halt against Master Windu's boots.
"You can all go to blazes," he said.